It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
a student would be able to express their political views in an appropriate manner, religious views, basically as long as it's not something that disturbs the school and the functioning of the school and the education of other students, as well as fairly appropriate for their age, no cuss words and things like that, it's generally protected.
Miriam Sinsel at the University of Richmond explains the street law program and how law students teach everyday practical legal concepts to high school students. And during our weekly question and answer session, you'll find out when a creditor or employer can treat you differently, and when they can't, if you file for bankruptcy. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. This show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR.
Ain't gonna let discrimination turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Gonna let discrimination turn me around. I'm gonna keep on a walking, keep on a talking, marching up to freedom land.
And now, this week's news you can use. On November 3, the Virginia Department of Social Services began taking applications for the Energy Crisis Assistance Program. Crisis assistance is intended for emergencies. It helps eligible households when fuel assistance or other resources can't. Emergencies include lack of heat, imminent utility cutoff, and inoperable or unsafe heating equipment. Crisis assistance may pay a utility security deposit, purchase a portable space heater, buy primary home heating fuel, pay for emergency shelter, pay a primary heat utility bill, repair or replace heating equipment, and provide supplemental heating equipment or maintenance. To be eligible, certain income and citizenship rules must be met. Applications for equipment-related assistance, security deposits, and emergency shelter are accepted from November 1 through March 15 at local departments of social services. Applications for assistance to pay for heating fuel and utility bills are accepted from January 2 through March 15. Applications for the regular fuel assistance program are accepted from October 14 through November 14. Fuel assistance helps with the cost of home heating and pays part, but not all, of this expense. To be eligible, certain income guidelines and living arrangements must be met, and the household must be responsible for paying the heating bill. Applicants for fuel assistance should expect eligibility determinations by mid-December. In other news, starting November 3, Medicaid requires 5 days advance notice when requesting medical transportation for a single trip. However, recipients will not be denied trips the first or second time they call with less than 5 days' notice. There are several exceptions to the 5-day advance notice rule. If you wake up sick and the doctor will see you sooner than 5 days, or if your doctor wants a follow-up visit in less than 5 days, that's an urgent trip and doesn't need 5 days' advance notice. The new rule also doesn't apply to standing orders for services that recipients attend at least 3 times weekly. Standing orders account for about 75% of all Medicaid trips. Medicaid strongly encourages recipients who are able and willing to use their local bus when practical, and recipients who frequently need medical transportation may be given a bus pass instead of tickets. In addition, friends, families, or volunteers who take recipients to Medicaid appointments may be given mileage reimbursement. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is debtor interrogatories. Debtor interrogatories can be issued by a court only after a judgment has been granted against you. Debtor interrogatories require that you come to a hearing at a certain date, time, and place. This allows the creditor who has the judgment to ask you questions about your income and property. The questions and answers help the creditor try to collect the judgment. If you don't go to court to answer debtor interrogatories, you can be arrested. The arrest is because you didn't come to court, not because you didn't pay the judgment. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's Legal Term of the Week.
This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. This is your host, Marty Wegbright, and it's time for our weekly question and answer session. We have our questioner in the studio. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Tina, and I'm from Richmond, Virginia.
Thank you, Tina. Welcome to the show. What's your question for us this week?
What effect will Chapter 13 bankruptcy have on attaining employment?
And we're talking specifically about a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, or would your question also apply to a Chapter 7 bankruptcy?
Chapter 13.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask is because the anti-discrimination provisions of the Bankruptcy Code actually apply to both a Chapter 13 bankruptcy and a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. And there's a protection written into the federal code. It's fairly short, and I can read it here. It says, no private employer may terminate the employment of or discriminate with respect to employment against an individual who is or has been a debtor under the bankruptcy laws, or solely because such debtor or bankrupt individual has been a debtor under the Bankruptcy Act, has been insolvent, that is, no money, before the commencement of the bankruptcy case, or has not paid a debt that was dischargeable in a bankruptcy case. Now, the problem with that statute, and it sounds great on its surface, is that tricky little word may not discriminate solely because you've filed bankruptcy or been insolvent or not paid a debt that was dischargeable. In other words, how do you prove that that was the reason and the only reason that you were either terminated from your job or didn't get another job? It's probably easier to show discrimination if you were terminated from the job, because at least there you've got a track record and you can point out that there was no other reason for you to lose your job other than the fact that you filed the bankruptcy. But getting a job is a very different situation, because the employer is, you know, free to hire or not hire for any reason at all, good reason, bad reason, or no reason, as long as it's not a discriminatory reason, which would include discrimination because you have filed bankruptcy or not paid a debt that was discharged. And as you probably know from your experience, when you apply for a job, you're not the only applicant. There could be dozens of other applicants, and why you didn't get hired may have nothing to do with the fact that you filed bankruptcy, or it may have something to do with it. But even if it has something to do with it, that's probably not going to be good enough. You have to show that that was the sole reason. So if the employer is foolish enough, or prospective employer is foolish enough to say, you know, we just can't hire you, you filed bankruptcy, you got a case, If they're not foolish enough to do that, you're going to have to kind of use circumstantial evidence, which often can be a difficult situation. The other thing I would say is that if you're in a position handling money, then the fact that you have filed bankruptcy, you know, could in theory be used against you, not because you filed a bankruptcy, but because it might show some degree of not being financially responsible. Does that all make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you for being on the show. And this is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbrand. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. And we're here at the Virginia Poverty Law Center talking with Miriam Sinsel, who is a third-year law student at the University of Richmond Law School. Miriam has interned at three different legal aids. She is also the president of the street law program at the University of Richmond Law School and has been a board member with that program for the past 2 years. And it is street law that we will be talking about. Welcome to the program, Miriam.
Thank you, Marty.
Welcome. Thank you for being here. First question is, what is street law?
Street law is a program, it's actually national, and was started in Georgetown in the 1970s, and it's a program where law students go, whether it's a high school or a local community center, and teaches middle school and high school students about legal issues that are relevant to their lives. Most of these are lower income children.
And is this program now in existence in the Richmond area?
Yes, actually we just started it up 2 years ago, and I was on the original board with that. Erin Murphy was the student. She just graduated this past year. She initiated it, and I joined along, and that's where it began.
And which high schools and middle schools do you go to teach street law?
We actually haven't worked with a school, but what we've been doing is working with the William Byrd Community House, which is in downtown Richmond. We've worked with them since the beginning, and this year we're hoping to go into Gilpin Court and work with the Friends Association.
And where do these students generally come from?
Most of these students are from the inner city. The William Byrd Community House generally has children coming from a few local schools. The Gilpin Court, or the Friends Association in Gilpin Court, usually serves the students the children who live in that area.
And is there a set time for the course to be taught? Is it like a 10-week course, a 20-week course, or is it sort of come and go as you wish?
We generally schedule a 6-week course, one lesson a week, and it's done during the normal after-school hours.
So what are the lessons? Can you tell us, you know, week by week what the street law is going to cover?
Mm-hmm. This semester, we're going to be covering 5 different topics, and we also have a 6th element that's new this semester, which I'll talk about in a minute. The first topic is The first topic is violated rights and taking civil or legal action appropriately. That's in order to address the fact that many people don't know what their rights are, and to encourage them of what kind of actions are appropriate to take in order to say, hey, I haven't been treated fairly.
Now, what type of violated rights are we talking about? And what type of unfair treatment are we dealing with here?
With this specific lesson, I haven't addressed, I'm still in the process, of course, of writing the lesson plans. I haven't specifically addressed issues. It's kind of a basic, more focused on the kinds of actions you can take to protect your rights and the importance of knowing what the laws are concerning your rights and your responsibilities as a citizen.
Okay, so that's week one. What about week two?
Week two will be free speech in schools. This will be talking about your First Amendment right to free speech and what it means, how the school can control that, because there are certain special circumstances in how free speech is allowed in a school.
So I guess part of this would be talking about maybe recent Supreme Court cases like the Bong Hits for Jesus case?
That will definitely include among them, yes.
And tell our listeners, what is the Bong Hits for Jesus case all about?
Well, that case was when a school decided to assemble for a rally, and one student decided to bring a banner to get media attention, of course, and the banner said, Bong Hits for Jesus, and he definitely got in trouble for having that by the school.
And apparently the Supreme Court said that he could be disciplined for that.
He could, because it was considered a school activity.
But what rights could a student exercise in terms of free speech that could not be disciplined?
A student would be able to express their political views in an appropriate manner, religious views, basically as long as it's not something that disturbs the school and the functioning of the school and the education of other students, as well as fairly appropriate for their age, no cuss words and things like that. It's generally protected.
Okay, what about week three?
Week three is going to be concerning family rights, basically addressing the issues of custody and visitation, sort of giving children an awareness of where they are in that, and like what does it mean when they're caught up in the middle of a custody battle or visitation issues and things. Like, for example, if a child is being picked up by dad after school and dad doesn't have custody over the child, can the child go with dad?
And do you find sometimes having to lapse into teaching what those rights are from the parents' viewpoint, especially since some of these teenagers may unfortunately soon be parents themselves?
Most definitely. It's important to try to give a whole picture of what is involved with these kind of issues.
Okay. Week four, what would be covered there?
Week four is going to be protecting your credit. That's definitely a major issue among lower-income people, especially whenever there's a lot of predatory practices in loans and in different consumer law issues. And so we're going to be focusing on what is credit, what does it mean to have credit, how do you use credit, especially in terms of credit cards, because a lot of people tend to do a lot of impulse buying without really recognizing the consequences.
Now, I know one of the major markets for the credit card industry are college students. Mm-hmm. You can't go to a college campus these days without being inundated by credit card companies wanting to extend credit. Do you find this even filtering down pre-college into the students that you're working with?
I don't actually have any data or knowledge of whether that is, but I think it's very important to start children early. One reason why we wanted to address consumer issues with children is because some parents or grandparents have actually used these children's names instead of their own to get something that based on credit because their scores were already so low they could not get a loan, for example. And so by the time these children reach the age of majority, they've already got bad credit.
Do you also talk to them about other types of predatory lending, like payday loans or car title lending?
We will be addressing predatory lending. I'm not sure that we'll be focusing on that specifically because one of our groups of students is actually going to be a younger group, and I'm not sure that they would know so much about that. But with an older group, I think we would definitely be focusing on predatory lending.
Okay. What about week five?
Week five is going to be focused on crime in your community, and we're really centering around gang involvement and gang activity and what are the legal consequences for even being at the wrong place at the wrong time or for being even knowing or driving the car for someone else who is actually doing the criminal activity.
And so what rights do young people have if they are picked up on, say, a juvenile delinquency petition? Will you be covering those things as well?
I hadn't thought about that, but it probably would be a good idea to address some of the juvenile justice issues. We've had lessons in the past that dealt with the juvenile justice system and sort of what are your rights and what's the difference between being in the juvenile justice system versus being in the adult system.
Okay. And then you mentioned that you're going to be adding something for the program that you've not had before. Mm-hmm. What would that be?
This is a new program, which I'm pretty excited about. We're giving the students materials and guidance from some of the law students as well as some of the undergrad students at the Legal Aid, some of the undergrad students at the University of Richmond. And basically, they will be able to create something that will represent or address any of the issues that we've covered this semester. So, for instance, they could draw a picture to represent a family custody problem. They could write a poem. They could even come up with a potential program that could address any of these issues.
Okay. And after the students go through the 5 or now I guess 6 weeks program, have you ever gotten any feedback from students who have gone through these programs as to what they felt about it and how useful they believed it was?
It's very important to our program to get feedback from the kids because it is a new program in Richmond, and we want to know where to proceed to, and we want to know what kids are going to be interested in the future and what we could change to improve the program. And I know specifically with the kids from last semester, they were continually asking when we were going to come back and teach them. They really enjoyed the lessons, and they were very enthusiastic about what we had to teach them.
So if one of our listeners wanted to find out more about the local street law program, possibly even go down to the Bird Center or some other location to enroll and do one of these classes, how would they do that? Who would they contact?
Well, usually we go to the center themselves, and the students who are enrolled at that community center are the ones who participate in the program. So usually we work with the kids who are already in one of the community center's after-school activity programs.
Okay, so that would be right now the William Byrd Community Center.
Mm-hmm, and the Friends Association Children in Gilpin Court.
Okay, so people would need to contact one of those two organizations in order to find out more information about the street law program.
That would be a good idea, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. We have been talking with Miriam Sinsel, a third-year law student at the University of Richmond, about the street law program here in Richmond. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Marty.
Hang on, let injustice turn me around. Turn me around. No, turn me around. Ain't gonna let injustice turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up the freedom land.
We're back with the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about repossessions. The first tip is that a creditor can't repossess property you are buying on credit unless you sign something allowing that, and you are more than 10 days late with a payment. The second tip is that a creditor may repossess property only if that can be done without a breach of the peace. A creditor can't repossess if that would involve any violence, force, threat, force entry, trespass, or entry without your consent. The third tip is that if you object to a repossession, the creditor or repo person has to stop and must go away. If not, you should call law enforcement and ask to have them arrested. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Getting even a simple, uncontested, no-fault divorce in Virginia is so complex, it almost always takes a lawyer to get it done. Those who can't afford one face long waiting lists for free lawyers. A new program at the University of Richmond School of Law hopes to cut the wait. Join us next week when Tara Casey at the University of Richmond explains divorce in Virginia and how law students will be helping meet this need. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Ringer.